Hello, everyone. Justin here with the Gear Priority Podcast. Today, we're going to answer the question of what is the best backpacking gear for through hiking, or we're at least going to try. I'm here with Mac. Mac is, in the best way I can describe it, a happy human. I think there's a lot that goes into that, but my impression is that Mac kind of does his own thing, and the things he does and the way he organizes his life is in the pursuit of happiness and adventure. That being said, he also runs the Halfway Anywhere website, which is probably best known in the wider world for thru-hiker surveys for the CDT and PCT and all the data that comes out of that. We'll get into those surveys and what they entail a little bit later. But first, hello, Mac. Welcome. And did I fit you into an accurate enough box with that intro there, or was I way off?
No, hey, I guess that's accurate. You know, I can't complain about that introduction. I guess I am generally a happy person. I try to be happy. I do run the website Halfway Anywhere. So yeah, A plus.
Nice. I read through your about me, and you kind of griped about me's in your about me.
Oh yeah, I know. That's something that I always need to go back. People reference that like all the time, and I'm always like, oh, I need to go back and revisit that, because I don't know, depending on like where I am just in my life and mentally, it's like it needs to be updated probably every year, and I don't know if I've updated that in like the last two or something.
I hear you. There's probably so many little snippets of different pieces of our personalities and life kind of throughout the internet. It's hard to make it all coalesce.
I know, too many channels.
Yeah, exactly. So we always start off with a rapid fire question, just kind of warm things up, get to know you a little bit, just like one word, one sentence answers here. Starting with the first one, I read that you've never broken a bone. Is that still the case?
Still the case. Possible that I've broken some fingers, but maybe not. I don't know.
All right. If you could break one bone, which would you choose if you had to break a bone?
Can I break a finger? my right pinky finger?
That's fine. That's a good answer. I'd be a little concerned if someone was like my femur or something like that. But So I know you're kind of a little bit of a nomad sometimes, but what's your primary container for your like residence right now? Like are you in a van right now, or are you like living in houses, or
no, right now I'm living in a house. I'm based in Sacramento, California, but I did just buy a van, but it's currently just a shell, but hopefully within a year it'll be livable.
Sweet. And when you're picking out backpacking gear, do you prioritize comfort or weight for your gear?
I guess comfort, but I don't know. There's a deeper, longer answer to that, I suppose.
It's probably depends on maybe a hybrid of balancing priorities.
I've begun to prioritize novelty in a little bit, like just things I've never used or new things, or just, you know, I'm trying to try as much as possible.
That's fair. What's the top trail on your bucket list?
Oh, well, the Hayduke Trail right now, which I'm going to go hike at the end of this month. So, but after that, probably the High Pyrenees route in France.
Sweet. Yeah, I think maybe we'll get into the Hayduke a little bit here too. Last question, toilet paper or bidet?
Toilet paper and wet wipes, and pack them all out.
Nice. Yeah. have you tried a bidet before?
I mean, I used to live in Japan and I had an awesome Japanese toilet with a bidet that I loved, but like as far as backpacking, like I just like too much of a mess. Like I like to be able to contain everything that's happening. So toilet paper and wet wipes.
Fair. So I think we're 3 for 3 toilet paper. So I need to bring on the first bidet at some point.
Oh, I got some friends who swear by it. I think it's just, you know, it's a personal thing.
It is. That's a very personal aspect of backpacking. And I made the switch this year. And I think on the longer trails, like when I'm just at campsites and like general trails, I'll just bring toilet paper, especially if there's like outhouses. But when I'm on like a 7-10 day trip, the bidet just keeps things so much cleaner.
Well, that's why I got the wet wipes.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, the wet wipes kind of do the same thing.
But then you got the weight or whatever. You got packing out.
Yeah, and I get pretty OCD with my toilet paper. I don't know what do you just bring like do you just unravel like on your hand as much as you think you'll need, or do you like get meticulous as far as like, okay, I got 4 squares per wipe, 3 wipes per day?
Nah, I'm usually just like take a bunch and I'm like, yeah, that looks okay. And then like when it gets like below halfway, I'm like, all right, I better start rationing.
then you're down to like the one square, like one finger approach by the end of the trip. Is
ideally no, but I don't think I've ever gotten to that point. I'm generally pretty careful.
That's good. So you mentioned you're going to be starting the Heyduke Trail. You just want to kind of run us through a little bit what that looks like for you, and how, like, just kind of what the trail's like, maybe how long it's going to take you, and what kind of led you to wanting to go down to that trail.
So the Heyduke it's like the Heyduke Trail, but it's half of it's like a route. It's not all along established trails or roads. It's approximately 800 something ish miles across Utah. It goes from Arches National Park and ends in Zion National Park. Generally, people hike it east to west. And I don't know, it's become a more popular trail in recent years, and it's just like one of those like really cool parts of the country that, you know, I love the Sierra Nevada and California, and it's like one of my favorite places, but like the desert in southern Utah is just like such a different place. It's you know, awesome in its own right. So it's just seems like it'll be challenging. There's a couple sections where you can pack wrap, so I'm bringing a pack wrap for some of it, which will be fun. It's not something I've done before, at least on a trail, like carry a pack raft with me. So,
and then how many months do you think it'll take you?
So I think a minimum, it would be 4 weeks if I was like really trying to push it. And then maximum would be 8 weeks if like I ran into like logistical problems and, maybe had to wait for a permit or snow melt or something somewhere. So probably around 6 weeks, like a month and a half is what I'm expecting.
Nice. Yeah. That'll be a good trip. And I guess like, we kind of mentioned that you run the Halfway Anywhere website. Is that your full-time gig right now? Is that what's allowing you to take this time off and go hike this trail?
Yeah. So that's been my full-time gig since like finishing the CDT in 2017. So it's been, and I started it back in 2011. So it's been quite a journey, but yeah, for the last couple of years, it's solidly been my full-time gig, and it's awesome because, you know, pretty much my whole life now is just backpacking and outdoor things and writing, and it's great. I love it.
I know a lot of people, I get told this a lot running like the YouTube channel about hiking backpacking. People often say like, don't turn your passion into your job. Like I kind of disagree with that, but how's it been for you kind of mixing those things?
I think that sentiment a lot of times comes, like, I think I'm in, or maybe not just me, but there's two different spaces that you can be in if you're like turning your passion into your job. And I personally am not accountable to anybody else. Like, so it's like, if I want, like, I write about whatever I want to write about, I post whatever I want to post. I don't have, you know, I'm not sponsored by some company or entity that's saying like, oh, you have to do this, you have to go here. Like, so I think if you're turning your passion into your job and you end up like working for someone or something, and you don't have that freedom anymore, like that's where it kind of gets, you know, ruined. Whereas if you still have that freedom, then it's, you know, that's the way to do it. If you can choose.
That makes sense. Yeah. I feel like maybe that's why I feel the same kind of way that you do, is because it's, I just do whatever I want, not beholden to anybody. And if I want to go on a trip 1 week, I can, other than my fiance, she's the only one that I'm kind of can't be off, it'd be a tough sell for an eight week trip at this point, leaving her with the dog. But otherwise, yeah, just doing my own thing, and it's pretty sweet. What's with the?
I was just gonna say, I do sometimes fantasize about, so like on the Heyduke, I'm planning all of this stuff, and I'm like, oh, I need to document this because there's like not that good of documentation about it, so I really want to put out lots of content that's gonna help people hike the Heyduke in the future. And you know, I want to make videos, I want to take photos, I want to do stuff with maps and permits and all this stuff. And so sometimes I just fantasize about, oh, it'd be nice to just like hike it and not worry about any of that, like not take any pictures, not take any videos, not take any notes, and just like really be out there. So that is the one downside, but I digress.
Well, and it's a trade-off too. Like I feel the same way sometimes. And I do try to take as many like kind of non-content trips as I can, but at the same time, when I'm not like documenting it, I find I'm not engaged in the trail as much either. Like when I document a trail, I'm just like paying attention to everything, picking out everything. Like I'm not missing as much. I almost feel like I get a different appreciation for the trail, even though I may be not getting the same kind of like solitude experience or Like, yeah, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no. I definitely hear that. Like, you know the names of things. You can, like, tell people, like, oh, yeah, this part of the trail, like, this, yeah. There's definitely a middle ground somewhere.
Yeah, there is, exactly. And it's all about finding that. And when you have the freedom, that's nice. But for people who aren't familiar with, like, halfway anywhere, and more specifically, you're probably best known for the hiker surveys. Is that an accurate statement?
Probably, yeah. That's if somebody knows the website, it's likely that that's why they're familiar with it.
Yeah. So can you just run us through quickly, like, what the hike, like how the hiker surveys started and what they entail?
So it started back in 2013 when I first hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. It was kind of just starting to blow up. The book Wild had come out, the movie Wild hadn't come out, and it wasn't something that, like, you could just assume people know about. I think it's still not something you can assume people know about, but certainly a lot more people do know about it. And so just the information available online or just in general wasn't very great. And most of it was just like anecdotal and kind of like, oh, this person this year said this. And, you know, I got out on the trail and realized like most of the information I had consumed before hiking the trail was, you know, pretty useless. As you know, it made you feel good, like planning and everything, but as far as just like actionable stuff for the trail, is like, oh, like that was a completely different experience. So, also like a big question back when I started was like starting date, like when do you start? Because there didn't used to be the quota permit at the Southern Terminus, and you know, people could just start whenever they wanted. And you know, the snow in the Sierra was always a concern, it's still a concern, especially this year. But, so I'm like, wow, it'd be really cool to just like kind of see what the average start date was and ask as many people as I could when they started and figure that out. And then, you know, from that, I was like, well, you know, then I could ask this question too and this question too. And then it just grew into this, you know, fairly large survey of questions that I asked a bunch of hikers. And then I published the results and then did it again the next year and, you know, got feedback, modified it based on that feedback, you know. And yeah, and then I hiked the Continental Divide Trail and decided to do the same thing for the Continental Divide Trail. And now it's turned into a really big thing. You know, last year on the PCT, I had almost 1,000 people respond, and yeah, like it's.
I'm looking on your website right now. It looks like for CDT, the data goes back to 2017. And you said 2013 for the PCT.
A decade, yeah. And actually this year, probably after I get back from the Hayduke, I'm hoping to put together like a, you know, 10 years of data retrospect, look back, kind of compare. I did one in I think 2019 with like 7 years of data, but I don't know. 10 years sounds a lot better.
Yeah, it's a nice round number.
So we'll see. And then of course we'll have like the COVID year and like everything, there'll be some weird thing that happens there. But then yeah, it'll be really interesting to kind of see how things have changed over the years.
I will be. I'm looking forward to that. We'll talk a little bit later about some trends that maybe you've seen and kind of pulled out, especially over the years and where things are going. I'm curious, like, when people are using the data, I don't know, and I don't know if you have this kind of off the top of your head, as far as, do you find that it is mostly through hikers who want to be hiking these trails who are going in and taking a look at the data? Or do you have kind of even like weekend warriors or people who might be planning like a week long trip, just wanting to see? Because through hikers, like, they're out there for a long time. So if a piece of gear is working for them, it's probably going to work.
I don't know specifically, like, you know, I don't necessarily like ask people when they get in touch with me, like, what do you hike? Like, unless they tell me. But I mean, if I was somebody who hadn't through hiked, you know, and I was looking for like a good piece of gear, like I would probably would be like, well, what are the people through hiking using? You know what I mean? Like, 'cause they're the ones who are going to be using it the most, like beating it up the most. But then you do have the trade-off where it's like, if you're only going out for a couple of days, you don't necessarily have to spend $300 more on a piece of gear because it weighs 6 ounces less than this other piece of gear. So, you know, you got to be careful if that's where you're coming from.
Exactly. And there's some, like, especially I find when I'm looking at the highest rated gear, there's some like th some almost like through hiker bias. It's just very much like prioritizing some very specific like use cases and performance traits compared to like what someone who might be out there for a weekend might be wanting.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually probably that'd be a great thing to ask people when I ask because I asked people to rate all the pieces of gear that they had, and a good piece of data for every person to have would be like, you know, like you asked me at the beginning, like, what do you prioritize in a piece of gear? Like, you know, comfort or weight or whatever, because, you know, somebody who prioritizes weight, you know, they might suffer with a piece of gear for a couple of days, but they'll be like, no, 10 out of 10, it was great. Whereas somebody else is going to be like, no, this was terrible. Like, I had a miserable couple of days, like, not good, like, do not recommend. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, depending on your priorities, I'm sure there's people out on trail, and you probably saw like the gamut of people with like 50, 60 pounds of gear. And then you have people who are sleeping on 1/8-inch foam mats under a Dyneema tarp and have a 5-pound pace weight or something. It's probably pretty crazy. I think the average base weight was higher than I expected, like something around like mid 15 pounds or so. Is that?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was like 14 or 15 or 16. Yeah, somewhere around there was definitely it.
Yeah, I just found it here. 15 pounds is the end weight for the PCT. People start at 17 pounds base weight for the PCT. That was kind of surprising to me. Seemed high.
I don't know. I think if you're in this world, like if you're really into gear and all of that, like, you hear, you know, you know that like people have 5-pound base weights, whatever, sub 10-pound base weight. And so like anything above that, you're like, oh, that's heavy. But like, you know, if you're just like somebody new to hiking and you're coming into it and you're just buying whatever gear is at like your local shop or whatever, that's a totally reasonable base weight to have. Like, you know, as long as your base weight isn't like, you know, 30, 40 pounds, like on a trail like the PCT where you don't need to have that much stuff with you. Like, I mean, you're generally totally fine.
Yeah, and I guess you're hitting towns every like 3 to 5 days kind of thing on the PCT.
Yeah, there's no super long stretches. Like, there's a couple that people do, but you can be in town every so often if you'd like, you know, as far as getting more food. So you don't have to, there's no like 10-day food carries on the PCT.
Okay. That makes a difference. I know when I hiked the Great Divide Trail, there's an eight or nine day food carry, and that got pretty heavy, especially with using a frameless pack and no hip belt and stuff. But yeah.
No, on the Hayduke, I have like a 9-day food carry that I'm gonna have 8 liters of water and a pack wrap. So I'm really excited about that.
What's that bumped you up to, like 60 pounds?
Okay, so I just put together my gear list, and actually my total base weight, including all of my camera gear and the pack wrap and everything in my fanny pack, is like 25 pounds, which I was actually really surprised. I thought it was going to be more, but then, you know, 8 liters of water is what, like 2.2 pounds per liter. So that's like 18 pounds. Yeah, 20 pounds. So that's 45 plus however. So it's going to be like a 65 pound pack or 70 pound pack. I'm using the ULA circuit, which is consistently like one of the most popular, highest rated packs for through hikers, and a pack I have never used before. And so I'm like, you know what? I need to use this pack. So one, I can talk to people about it because they ask me about it all the time. And two, because, you know, it's not a frameless pack. It's designed to carry a little bit more weight. So hopefully it'll serve me well.
Nice. Yeah, I was actually surprised about the ULA circuit being number one. Like you said, like pretty consistently. And I want to run through, because it was also interesting that the PCT survey results for the most commonly used gear and the CDT most commonly used gear, they're pretty similar. They lined up really well. But I wanted to run through them and then kind of get your thoughts on any like surprises that are in there, like gear that you, when you see it, you're like, that is just kind of weird to see in there, or that you'd think would be getting switched out for maybe some newer gear or something that might perform better. But just with the pack, like you said, ULA circuit, I think Z-Pack's Duplex has been pretty consistently the most common shelter. The Enlightened equipment, yeah, sorry.
It's shocking to me. Like, I've never used the Duplex. I actually intend on taking it on a trip later this year because it's another piece of gear that I'm like, I should use this. But it's shocking to me that the most common piece of gear that people have is a $700 tent. Like, it's insane. I'm like, it's crazy. But sorry, go ahead, we talk more about that.
Like, jump in whenever we hit one where you have a comment on. But like, yeah, that's, do you have the calculation as far as like what the total cost is for like the most common gear list?
So the most common gear list, not including or with one pair of shoes and one pair of socks, is $2,900.
$2,900. Okay.
So like almost a third of that is the duplex. Like, it's crazy. Like,
yeah, when you put it that way, when you're like, as a percentage of your overall gear, that's a pretty insane number, especially when you can get ones tents that are maybe like you said, like a few ounces heavier, but cost like a sixth of the amount.
I don't know. I mean, and maybe we're going to get into this later, but one of the things about the survey is like, I never intended it to be like a self-fulfilling prophecy as far as like gear. Like, I feel like some things, like I haven't used it, but the Outdoor Research Helium rain jacket is like consistently the most popular rain jacket that people have because it's like super light, and it's also consistently like one of the lowest rated pieces of gear that people, like, nobody likes it, but then like everybody buys it because I presumably they see that everyone else is using it, and I'm just like, no, like, everyone stop buying this rain jacket, like, nobody likes it, like, it's not gonna help you if it actually rains, like, so like that's the one problem with like putting this out there is like, I don't want, you know, people still need to think critically about what they're getting and not just blindly, you know, pick whatever's on the list. Because like, personally, like, I look at the most common gear list and like things I'm taking on the Hayduke with me, like zero of these things. Like, oh, well, I'm taking the circuit because I'm trying the circuit out. But other than that, like, I'm not, or, all right, I'm using the X-Lite too. But other than that, it's like, so it's like, there is no like, oh, this is the best everybody uses it type of gear. Like, it's,
yeah. Even when you look at the highest rated, the ULA circuit for the CDT is also, it's the most common and highest rated. So I can see that definitely going to be perpetuating probably the its usage on those trails. But then you have like, for the shelter, it's the Nemo Hornet two person. And then it's actually, I was surprised that it's a sleeping bag, the Western Mountaineering Versalite, as the most popular, like, sleeping bag. It's not a quilt. So, and then the sleeping pad being a foam sleeping pad as the most highest rated. Like, that's where in my mind, I'm like, this has to be like some very niche people who are just like prioritizing it not popping on them. Like, do you have any insight? Especially like the foam mats. I don't know if you've ever slept on one, but they're, for me, they're not comfortable.
I don't know. I have. I hiked the whole PCT with a foam mat. And honestly, I would. My biggest gripe with the foam mat is just the bulk. Like, if it wasn't for the bulk, I would bring a foam mat all the time, I think. I just really like having like a very compact backpack, even if it's heavy. Like, I just like having everything nice and neat and compact. I don't know. I mean, if you sleep on your back, like, foam pads are great. Like, you know, if you're a side sleeper, like, your arm's going to be asleep like every hour and you're going to have to wake up and turn around to the other side. And the Versalite's awesome. Like, I have a Versalite. I use the Versalite on the CDT, and the CDT gets cold, like, for a lot of, like, in Colorado and stuff. So it's like, if you don't have a warm sleeping bag, like, you're not going to have a good time for a lot of it.
Yeah, fair. And I guess a lot of people probably switch things out to, like, as well. Like, but you use the Versalite with the Z-Lite for, like, because you said you use the foam mat the entire time, or am I getting the trails mixed up there?
Yeah. Sorry. PCT, I use the Z-Lite, and then CDT, I use the Versalite with, I think, an X-Lite on the CDT.
Okay. Yeah, because the X-Lite, you can't really beat that warmth to weight ratio.
No, and they actually just came out with a new one that I'm using on the Hayduke. That's the X-Lite NXT, which presumably stands for next. I don't know, but it says on the box, now 6 times quieter. So
yeah.
Hopefully they took that feedback of it being such a loud and crinkly pad. And I haven't actually blown it up and slept on it yet, but we'll see.
It is. It's actually insanely quiet. I've like compared them side by side, and you know, I was blown away by how much quieter it is.
All right, cool. Well, then I'm looking forward to waking up the nobody I'm hiking the Hayduke.
So. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the big four there. So the duplex is an interesting one. For, I just want to quickly run through like, and light equipment, Torrid jacket. Feel free to interrupt me if any of these are like kind of a surprise to you. The Helium we already talked about as a rain shell, garbage rain shell. If people are listening and they're trying to get a rain chill, like you're better off using almost anything else. The Melanzana Microgrid hoodie, fleece, ultra lone peak footwear, darn tough socks.
Let me stop you with the fleece. I don't know why people are bringing fleeces on the PCT now. Like I'm wearing a Melanzana Microgrid fleece right now. It's like my like lounging around like the house wear, like car camping, hanging out. Like unless you're wearing your fleece like all the time when you're hiking, or you're like using it just as like a mid layer with like a shell instead of a down jacket. Like I feel like people are just bringing fleeces to be cool now or something. Like I don't know. Like nobody who really cares about weight is like also bringing a fleece and a down jacket. Like it's weird to me that like fleeces have become a thing. I think they're more trendy than anything else, at least on like the long trails, you know, where people are trying to get their base weights down.
Well, they're bulky and heavy. Do you have the option on any of these for people just to be like, I just don't bring that? So like if you said like, hey, what fleece you bring, they like that could just be a no one brings fleeces answer.
Yeah, so if you go down to like the breakdown of the fleeces, let me see if I can find it here. I do say, yeah, so 50% of hikers said they brought an insulated jacket and a fleece. 47% said they only brought an insulated jacket, and then 2.4% said they brought a fleece only. And that is of 52% of hikers who said they brought a fleece. So 48% of hikers didn't bring a fleece, but the majority, 52%, said they did. So it's a pretty significant amount of people who had fleeces.
Yeah, and most of them brought the Melanzana.
Yeah, yep. Which is weird because it's like so weird that everybody has these, because it's like you can only buy them at the store in Leadville, Colorado. So I don't know. Which is on the CDT. So if you want to buy a Mel, you should just go hike the CDT and then you can go to Leadville and buy one.
But it's also the most popular for the PCT, so.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, I'm looking at the PCT. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm like, I don't get it. Why is it so, I don't know. They've done a very good job of, you know, creating the demand for their products.
Definitely. And for the shoes, something that's popped into my head was kind of the influencer culture out there. And I think the explosion of YouTubers that we saw probably around like 2017, 2018. I forget when like Darwin and Dixie started their channels. Did you see like around, I think we're probably more for the PCT because you started that before those channels got started, like a change in responses as especially those two thru-hikers started putting out content, like especially like I see the Lone Peaks like just seem to have exploded in the thru-hiking world kind of after those guys.
Yeah, I to be honest, I don't consume a lot of content on YouTube about like hiking, but it's the shoes are interesting. I actually have a post that I'm in the process of writing called like why Lone Peaks are like, it's basically about this exact question, like the ultra Lone Peak, and like they should not be as popular as they are. Like, yeah, they should be like one of the most popular shoes, but not like overwhelmingly the most popular shoe. And it's like, I think a perfect example of people just being like, oh, like this person's using it, or like these people are using it, like I'm gonna just go get this shoe. Like especially something like footwear is like literally the most like individual choice. Like you can make an argument that like a tent is better, a sleeping bag is better, or whatever, but like a shoe, it's like, you know, as long as it's a well bitch built shoe and it's not just gonna completely fall apart, which ultras do, which it's like, so like I have a pair of ultras that I've, you know, I have one pair of ultras that I've ever had and I haven't worn them out because I don't wear them enough to have used them, you know, to wear them out at all, because they're just like not my preferred shoe. So it's like, yeah, the ultra question is, yeah, I think I started asking about shoes a little later. Like gear wasn't something that I know in like the first maybe two surveys I didn't ask about gear. It was kind of something that I introduced in like maybe 2015 or 2016, so it might have already been around the time when like they were starting to get more popular, because I feel like they've always been like top of the popularity, but like recently I feel like they're just like overwhelmingly like more than 50% of hikers are using them, and I'm just like, wow, like this is a lot of people wearing ultras.
Yeah, it's insane, especially considering how the durability and how that I think you kind of nailed it. Like everyone's foot is different and everyone's footwear needs should be different as well. Like a one fit, like it doesn't make sense that the majority of people are all wearing the exact same shoe when everyone's, there's such a broad spectrum of different kind of feet out there. But I'm curious to see what that one, like, especially footwear and some of the other ones too, like the, like once you do the 10-year kind of comparison, imagine there'll be some neat graphs and stuff that kind of pop out of that potentially.
Yeah, hopefully. I'll have to wait a little bit longer for 10 years of gear, but we're getting there.
Yeah. And I think Pocket Rocket 2, Sawyer Squeeze, Black Diamond Trekking Poles, Garmin InReach, Camp Corsa Ice Axe, Micro Spikes, and then the Garmin Phoenix Watch. Any of those kind of pop out as interesting results to you?
They're only interesting in the sense that they're very standard. Like, those are, like, very standard issue pieces of equipment for thru-hikers, I feel like. Especially, like, you know, I guess the, like, Jetboils have become less popular, maybe, like, overall. Like, and people have accepted, like, oh, okay, it's not that bad just having a titanium pot and, like, a separate stove. I need to use a lighter to light sometimes because, I don't know, my auto lighters on all my stoves always break if you have the auto light ones. But yeah, you know, everything else, like Black Diamond poles, it's like poles are another thing. It's like whatever poles you like, you know, like if you break your poles, don't get the super lightweight carbon fiber poles, like get some aluminum poles. Like, but yeah, the InReach is definitely like the, man, I'm so glad. I was so happy when the InReach came out because I hated the Spot devices so much and I thought they were so terrible. And like the fact that like people still use it as like a generic term for like a PLB or like a satellite communicator like drives me crazy. Like, oh, just get a Spot. And I'm always like, no, like don't say that, don't get a Spot. So yeah, the InReach is awesome, and now they have the InReach 2, which, you know, is just gonna supplant the InReach and has USB-C, which is amazing because everything should also have USB-C.
I think we're there. I think you can now finally put together like a full ultralight kit with USB-C, which is nice.
I know, my one, so like the one thing that I use that doesn't have USB-C still is BioLite. I use a BioLite headlamp. It's the 325 now, like their lightest one. And they did a refresh where they used to have like the 200, 300, and 800. And now they have like the 325, 425, and like 825 or something. And the two bigger ones both have USB-C. And the smaller one has micro USB still. And I'm like, why did you change it on the other two and not on this one? But I could just change my headlamp, I guess, but whatever.
The little Rovi, I use the Rovibon flashlight. It's especially like in the summertime when it gets dark, like I'm usually going to bed before it gets dark. It's pretty useful because I just throw it in my pack and almost never worry about it. But it's a good one. And I think something that I was thinking about as I was looking through your website, and you had like contact me you kind of encouraging people to say hello. Have you ever had people reach out and kind of get like pissed off or mad at you for like saying like, hey, you said like this is the highest rated and then it like failed on me? Do you get any angry people coming at you?
I really don't get a lot of angry people. Like, I can't think of any emails, at least recently, that have been angry. And like I mean, the most angry responses I ever get to anything are usually just people commenting on things on Facebook. But like, if anybody says anything, you know, like beyond constructive criticism, if people are just straight up being like idiots on Facebook or whatever, I just block them immediately because I'm just like, I don't have time for like your garbage. Like, I have better things to do. But like, yeah, no, generally, and I think, you know, one of the things I hope, you know, kind of shields me is like, listen, I'm just sharing the data with you, everybody. Like, this is not my personal endorsement of like all of this gear. I'm just telling you what other people said, what worked for them, what didn't. Like, you know, I do have my own personal like gear reviews and gear lists and stuff, but you know, I never tell anybody, hey, this is what you should go and buy, or like you shouldn't. I mean, maybe sometimes you shouldn't buy this, but yeah, I think fortunately people have been kind as far as their responses.
That's good. Nice. Yeah. And I think the instant block is the way to go. No reason to give people another chance to be a dick. So with the with all the gear, do you ever, like, when you're personally putting together your gear lists or like looking at gear to maybe purchase, like how do you look at these and kind of, do they influence your decisions at all? I know you said you like to try out kind of like different stuff, but like if something pops up as kind of like maybe you haven't seen before as like a highest rated or something like that.
Very rarely. Like, actually, there is one example. So last year on the PCT survey, one of the third highest rated shell was the Black Diamond Stormline, Stormline Stretch, which I hadn't heard of and which was like new to the survey. And so I'm like, huh, okay, like I haven't seen that piece of gear before, so I'm actually bringing that with me on the Hadouk. Like, I don't know how much rain I'm going to encounter on the Hadouk. Like, I could probably get away bringing like a much lighter rain jacket because I think this one's like 12 ounces. But you know, like I at this point, I'm like, I don't care necessarily how much something weighs. Like, I'm out. I want to try new things and be able to like give people personal feedback and, you know, talk about things beyond just being familiar with them. So, you know, once in a while, something new will crop up and I'll, you know, just be like, oh, okay, like I haven't tried that before. Like, you know, that's why I'm trying the circuit now. Like, that's why I said, you know, I'm due to actually finally try a duplex out, because like people ask me about these things all the time and I can always just, I can refer them to the survey, but I, you know, I can't give them any feedback on my personal use if I haven't used it, which, you know, I like to be able to do. So it's more just, and you know, most of the things on the survey I have used or I am familiar with. So yeah, if something brand new kind of does pop up, I'm like, huh, like, what's this? Like, let me check this out.
And so are you putting together more gear review? Like you have quite a few gear reviews. Are you like kind of just expanding the amount of gear reviews that you have on the site for each item?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, like, I don't necessarily prioritize gear reviews, but like if, you know, on the Hadouk, I'm bringing a whole bunch of new gear, so I'll likely try to, you know, do as many reviews of new pieces of gear that I can. But, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I like to prioritize on the site, like, things that are going to... Basically, I try to write the things that I wanted to read while I was planning something. So I just put together, like, a hugely detailed post of Hadouk permits and, like, what permits you need, how to get them, how to not get them if you don't want to have to get them. And just basically, like, you know, took what I found on 50 different websites and tried to consolidate it all into one, you know, easy to manage place. So I actually do a lot of work while I'm planning for things, because like all the questions that I'm Googling, I'm like, oh, this is what I'm gonna write next, because like there's not a good source for this information anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're like, if you run into the problem or the issue as you're planning something, then other people are probably gonna want to know about it. Especially like you said, the Hadouk's becoming more and more popular of a trail, right? So it's a great one to kind of bring some awareness to it. I like that kind of content too. I get pretty nerdy and gear heady at times, but I think the information about like helping people get out on trail is more important than the gear is going to maybe make the trail more comfortable for them and have a little bit of a better experience if they, instead of taking terrible gear, but they have to get there first, right? And I think that's stuff comes with.
I was kind of thinking about it, like one of the questions that you asked me like in an email, and I was thinking about it and I was like, you know what, like I should just hike the PCT again and just use like the most generic, like not crappy gear, but just, you know, gear that like no one would use, and just hike the PCT and have a great time. Just like really show people like, hey, like, yes, your gear choices like can be important, but like it's not necessarily the thing that's going to make or break your hike. Like you can get out there and hike. Like you don't have to necessarily spend that extra money or get, you know, it's like people stress way too much about their gear, where like, you know, really, like I feel like the mindset is the most important thing. Like if you're like adaptable and like not too worried about things, like even if a piece of gear fails on you, like just get to the next town, get a new piece of gear, you know what I mean? Like it's like, it's not the end of the world. Like that's not gonna end your hike, like unless you just, you know, didn't save up enough money for your through hike and you can't afford a new piece of gear, then potentially. And that's a big issue. A lot of people run out of money and then they have to get off the trail. But yeah, I don't know. Gear is definitely important, but it's given a little too much importance a lot of times, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, I was talking about this with a friend the other day, and we looked at it like gear as a way that people stay kind of connected to like their passion, because you can't always be hiking. So the things that they can like still think about in regards to hiking a lot of the time are either planning that next trip, but if they don't know what their next trip is, then it's really just kind of dialing in and obsessing over gear. So I think that's why we see like a lot of gear obsession come into play, because it's really the only way people, like the only outlet people have for their passion, as well as like reading blogs and books and watching other people's trips. But
that makes sense. Yeah.
So yeah, I think I was curious with all the data you see, like, do you have it? Are there, like, we kind of talked about the most surprising kind of gear. Are there any surprising general trends, like any other trends that you've seen with gear that surprises you?
I mean, I'm always happy when I see like a smaller company like breakthrough like into like the most popular gear spots. You know, and then it's like it's also gotten to the point where like a lot of companies, I'm like, there needs to, like, there's like the small like garage like just bootstrapping companies, and then there's like the big companies, and now there's like them, those middle ground companies where I'm like, well, you started out as like a small company, but now like you're like a pretty big company, and like, do we still like you as a company? Like, are you still plugged into the community, or now are you just like profit seeking? Like, I don't know. So, but I guess that's the goal if you are a small company. So, like, congrats.
Yeah, it's kind of tough. I have the same thoughts of companies like Z-Packs and like Alight Equipment. Like, they started off as smaller cottage brands, but now they're big. Like, they're getting as much traffic as some like larger outdoor retail websites that carry tons of products. So it's, yeah. It's interesting. And I think I'm curious to see like whether there's more cottage brands that might break into the most common, as it seems like more cottage brands are getting exposure, especially like through like the Garage Growing Gear site. They kind of just took everything and put it into one place, so it's a little bit easier to find different brands that are like super tiny. Some of them are like producing 100 units of something like every couple months. So curious to see over the next few years if that impacts things at all. What about trends going into the future? Like, do you see things going in a certain direction? I guess that kind of like segues into that.
I don't know. Well, I guess one of the things just coming from the last one is quilts have definitely become a lot more popular, like, since the beginning of all the surveys. That's definitely one trend that like I can be like, oh yeah, this is 100% happening. But as far as going into the future, I don't know. I guess non-freestanding tents have also become a lot more popular. I think they used to be like really scary to a lot of people. Like, I was scared of non-freestanding tents when I started backpacking, and now I'm just like, I don't care. Like, they're just the same as like, they can be just as stable or whatever as another freestanding tent. But I don't know. Going forward, I don't know, hopefully people just continue to make, like, you know, because a lot of these people that start these companies are people that hike these trails. So hopefully, you know, more people are just hiking and then getting ideas and starting companies and, you know, making the things that hikers actually want or need, as opposed to the things that, like, you know, companies think hikers want or need. So
that'd be cool to see. I think I'd like to see better rain jackets break into the most common.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would like to see that, yes. Like, every year I'm like, wow, people really, really into those OR Heliums and Frog Togs, like, rain jacket, which, like, granted, a lot of times on the PCT, like, you don't necessarily have to worry too much about, like, being in the rain, but then, you know, on other trails, like, the CDT, like, you can expect a ton of rain, like, and even recently, like, I hiked the PCT in 2019, and even in the desert, it rained on me for, like, the first 2 weeks, so it's, like, you know, you never know what's gonna happen, and, like, a rain jacket really is something that can make you miserable or not miserable. Like, you know, it's worth a couple extra ounces for something like that, you know, if it's going to be a little heavier, if it's going to actually, because if there's rain jackets, people are like, oh, I'm going to buy this like super lightweight, like trail running, whatever rain jacket that's like designed to be worn for like an hour when it's misting outside, like not when you're hiking for 5 days in a row in like a downpour, you know, it's like, that's not what it's designed for. So it's not going to work in that situation. So it's like, just because it has like the word like shell or rain jacket or like water resistant in the title, like, you know, like I said, you really need to think about what's going to be important when you're out on the trail and, you know, you're in those tough spots, not when it's just sitting in your backpack.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I find that the toughest part of trails, especially like with those like 2 weeks of rain in the desert, it's probably tough to plan for that, because you're going to be trading off weight and bulk with a heavier rain jacket for like a low likelihood of this occurring, right? But like you said, if the consequences are super high and you're gonna be uncomfortable if you don't have it, then maybe it's worth bringing the heavier more expensive item.
Whenever people try to get like super whatever about gear and the weight and everything, I'm always just like, all right, well, do you treat the food that you're bringing the same way you treat the gear that you're bringing? Because some people will be like, oh, I'm gonna like shave down everything and cut tags off everything and whatever. And then they go in the supermarket and just like buy whatever. And I'm just like, whoa, like this is also still weight that you're carrying. Like, yeah, sure, it might not be part of like your base weight, but like how do you just like have no regard for the food that you're putting into your backpack? Like, shouldn't you only be buying like the most calorie dense, like the weight to calorie ratio food that you can get? And just like, that's the most important thing. Like, where are your priorities really? So it's like,
put that celery back. you're ultra light. Yeah, that's a good point. I see that a lot. I'm guilty of that too. I'll like obsess over the weight, and then I'll be like, well, I guess I'll bring this like apple and like.
You justify. You're like, well, I saved all that weight in my gear, so now I can bring this extra food, right? Like that's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool. That's great info, and I think like your website's an awesome resource. It was cool kind of hearing you couch how people should use it a little bit and kind of taking some of the things with a grain of salt, but then also like doing their own research, making sure the gear they're choosing is personalized to them. But I love checking out what the most common highest rate is, just kind of get ideas and see what other people are using and what's working well. And if people want to follow along on your Hey Duke trail, is their best way to do that? Like, are you gonna be posting to Instagram, or are you gonna kind of compile everything at the end?
My plan is to hopefully do, like, I'm definitely going to do a daily post on Instagram, and then I want to do actually like more, I want to do like a video for each section as well, but I expect to have near zero service while I'm on the trail. So I'll probably do like intermittent updates while I'm out there. And then once I'm back, actually post as if I'm on the trail. So, you know, I'll be posting on Instagram halfway anywhere, and then eventually my website and YouTube, hopefully as well. We'll see.
Nice. And all that's just halfway anywhere if people want to go check you out.
Yeah, halfway anywhere, Instagram, YouTube.com, TikTok.
TikToks. Are you TikToking?
It exists. I'm at the point where I just like repurpose like any Instagram reels or YouTube content like onto TikTok right now. I got to see if it's going to get banned first, you know, and then I can really get into.
Exactly. I post from Instagram, the same stuff I post Instagram to TikTok, but my TikTok stuff gets like 100 views, and then my Instagram stuff gets like 1,000. So I'm like, I don't know what's going on there, but maybe I'm not dancing enough, needing to incorporate more dance moves.
Yeah, Instagram and halfwayanywhere.com are the two places where I can like focus most of my attention right now.
Nice, that's awesome. Well, good luck on the trail. Really appreciate you coming on and chatting. Do you have any final words you want to share with the people? Or
oh, just pack out your toilet paper, everybody.
Yeah, that's a good one. We're definitely going to get some comments on the YouTube video of people saying, I'm just another animal. I'm going to poop and leave my toilet paper flung everywhere. And I don't
know. No, it's the worst. I mean, like, and people don't realize there's lots of places you're required to pack out your toilet paper. Like, it's not an option. Like, so, I mean, especially if you're like in the desert or the high alpine, it's like, a lot of places you should be packing. I have to pack out my poop in a couple places on the Hey Duke. I got to bring a wag bag. Like, don't be the person that's like, oh, I'm not going to Hey Duke. I'm special. I'm just going to like not pack out my poop. Like, no, like, you know, that's what you're signing up for. Like, you know, if you're in that area, you got to follow the rules. So
yeah. That's a great closing remark. I think everyone needs to be aware of the leave no trace principles and making sure that they're not leaving poop bombs everywhere for other hikers coming through. So that's awesome. Thanks a lot. Good luck on the trail, and we'll talk to you later.